From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson didn't get a national convention with days of national network television coverage. But he's out there campaigning for the presidency of the United States as the candidate of the Libertarian Party. It would be a different USA if he ran it his way. Much less government, troops brought home, no IRS, pot legal. Gary Johnson raises ardent supporters, maybe enough to tip the Romney-Obama race, and he raises lots of questions. This hour on Point, Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party candidate for president. You can join the conversation. Are you hearing the libertarian vision out there? Hearing Gary Johnson, is it a fantasy? Is it the way? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. He first came out as a Republican candidate for the presidency of the United States. You may have seen him in some of the very early Republican primary debates. At the Fox News debate on May 5th, 2011, Greenville, South Carolina, Gary Johnson explained why he should be the Republican nominee for president.
I think we're on the verge of a financial collapse unless we balance the budget, and that means some really, really tough choices that are all doable, and they're all doable under the context of a common sense business approach to the way government does business and a cost-benefit analysis that goes along with everything that government is doing. Gary Johnson, 2012.com.
It was not to be. Mitt Romney is that Republican candidate, but Gary Johnson is very much in the race as the Libertarian Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. Joining me now from Durham, New Hampshire, the former two-term governor of New Mexico, Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson. Governor Johnson, welcome to On Point.
Great to be with you, Tom. And just starting out, I'm asked the question all the time about won't I be wasting my vote? Let me pose this question. If everybody wasted their vote and voted for me, I would be next president of the United States.
That's true. That's true. What happened with that Republican effort, Gary Johnson? Why do you think, looking back on it, that didn't work out for you?
Tom, I got a bunch of examples, but let me give you one and ask you how you would have dealt with the following. First of all, about halfway through the debates, they stopped issuing criteria for the debates. But CNBC, their first debate, they issued two criteria for the debates. One was to be at 4% in any national poll over the prior year. The other was to be registered to run for president of the United States. Well, I'm registered to run as president of the United States, and I'm at 4% in Gallup in May. So undeniably, I qualify for the debates. CNBC would not return our phone calls as to why I was not given a seat at the debate table. And I really demanded of the Republican Party, the RNC, Reince Priebus, I demanded that you all stand up for me because the Republican Party here is being dictated to in ways that nobody is going to notice, and I'm being excluded very, very unfairly.
Why do you think Herman Cain was up there, Ron Paul was up there, you know, Michelle Bachmann was up there? Why were you the one who ended up popping out?
Well, so why didn't the Republican Party stand up for me in that situation? Well, they didn't. They abandoned me, and I was unfairly excluded in many, many ways. The one that I just pointed out is one example. And like I say, it just goes unnoticed by everybody. This is not the country that I believed that I've been growing up in. I've really been Pollyanna-ish regarding all this stuff. I really thought that running for president of the United States was going to be on par with running for governor of New Mexico, which I will say was completely inclusive. I mean, I was included in all the debates and all the discussions, and I was allowed to make my case. And, you know, I did get elected governor of New Mexico in a state that is 2-1 Democrat.
Yeah, fiscally responsible, socially accepting is how you describe yourself. Give us the main planks of the Gary Johnson platform, Gary. Governor.
Well, first, you started off by talking about ballot access. I'm on the ballot right now in 47 states and the District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. Tom, we're litigated in the other three. Mm-hmm. We believe we're going to be on the ballot in all 50 states. We'll see how that turns out. So there are other third-party candidates, but nobody's going to come close to 50 states. Nobody. So when I talk about my opponents, I'm going to talk about Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, given this 50-state ballot access. So I don't want to bomb Iran. I want to get out of Afghanistan tomorrow, bring the troops home. I do believe in marriage equality. I think it's a constitutionally guaranteed right on par with civil rights of the 60s.
For gay Americans.
For gay Americans. I want to get rid of the drug war. I want to legalize marijuana. I would have never signed the Patriot Act. I would have never signed the National Defense Authorization Act, allowing for you and I as U.S. citizens to be arrested and detained without being charged. I'm the only candidate that wants to ground Air Force One. I'm the only candidate advocating a balanced budget now, believing that unless we do this, we're going to find ourselves in a monetary collapse. A monetary collapse, very simply, when the dollars we have don't buy a thing, because of the accompanying inflation that goes along with borrowing and printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar that we spend. And I really think crony capitalism is alive and well in this country. Well, how do you kick that in the rear end? I think you abolish income tax, corporate tax, the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, and replace all of that with a national one national consumption tax. In this case, I am advocating the fair tax, which I think really reboots the American economy.
23% on all purchases, is that right?
That's correct. But before anybody falls off their chair, this ends up to be cost neutral, because if we use a can of Coke as an example, a can of Coke that sells for a buck arguably has 23% embedded tax, non-transparent tax in that can of Coca-Cola. You're going to do away. You're going to bleed out all that non-transparent tax. Coke isn't going to have to sell that can of Coke for a buck anymore to make the same profit.
By non-transparent, you mean everything they're paying for everybody else to pay their income taxes and everything else along the line.
Yeah, Social Security, corporate tax. You're bleeding. You're going to bleed all of that out. So the cost of goods and services is going to theoretically decrease by 23%. So it ends up being cost neutral. Coke will sell the can of Coke for 80 cents, make the same amount of profit. Cost neutral to you and I. It bleeds that non-transparent tax out of our exports. So that's really the answer when it comes to exports.
Is it not regressive, heavier on those with less than on those with more, to have a sales tax essentially as your main source of revenue?
So, Tom, a criticism of a consumption tax is that it is regressive, and that is a correct criticism of a sales tax. I am advocating one federal consumption tax. In this case, I am embracing the fair tax. It would be great if we could have a debate and a discussion over how to best implement one federal consumption tax. But the fair tax deals with that aspect of it by issuing all of us a $200 a month prebate check. So you get $2,400 a year. I get $2,400 a year, which allows all of us to pay for the fair tax up to the point of the poverty level. That's how
a kind of counterbalance on the regressive face of it.
Counterbalance on the on what is a correct criticism of a consumption tax, that it is regressive for those at the lowest end. This is how the fair tax deals with that.
Governor Johnson, above all, your big attack on deficit spending grabs the eye. I mean, you say you would cut the federal budget by 43% in year one of a Johnson presidency. How would you do that and why?
Well, of course, I can't promise a balanced budget. I can promise to submit a balanced budget. Mm-hmm. So that's my promise. My promise is to submit a balanced budget. My promise is to veto any legislation where expenses exceed revenue, believing that Congress will end up having to override that veto. But with those two promises kept, I believe that spending will be lower in that scenario than any other scenario that you could come up with.
Well, let's just picture it. What would that look like if, by some miracle, that actually you were president, that made it through Congress, we're cutting the federal budget by 43%? How? Where?
Well, Medicaid, you start off with Medicaid and Medicare. As governor of New Mexico, I oversaw the reform of Medicaid in New Mexico, health care for the poor. We took it from a fee-for-service model to a managed care model. We saved hundreds of millions of dollars, and we set up a better health care network. I believe at the time, if the federal government would have block-granted the state of New Mexico 43% less money, done away with all the strings and the mandates, that I could have effectively overseen the delivery of health care to the poor. I would apply that same template to Medicare, health care for those over 65. Look, when anybody
Are you saying half the money but same care?
not the same care. It can't be the same care. We've got to draw new lines. But if we give it to the states, 50 laboratories of innovation and best practice, I think that's exactly what we will have. We will have some fabulous success that'll get emulated. We'll also have some horrible failure that will get avoided. But the notion of Washington top-down knows best, that's what has us in the predicament that we're in right now.
A lot of people are going to freak out at the idea of nearly a 50% cut in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
Well, no. First of all, Social Security. I'm not. Social Security is absolutely savable. Some tweaks to Social Security, but we've paid into this system. I am advocating the fair tax. So when it comes to fair tax, that would no longer be a withholding from your payroll check. That would come out of the proceeds of the fair tax. But Social Security, very simply, raise the retirement age. You could have a very fair means testing. What did you pay in? What are you getting paid back relative to what you're making? An opt-in, opt-out provision, change the escalator built into Social Security from the wage index to the inflation rate, and then getting back to Medicare. Look, for those that fall off their chair, when you talk about a 43% reduction in Medicare, the alternative is no health care whatsoever. The alternative is no Social Security. Yeah, okay, so you get your $2,000 Social Security check. Well, what if it doesn't buy anything? That's a monetary collapse.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, out to slash federal spending by almost half and bring the troops home from almost everywhere. He joins us today from Durham, New Hampshire. He is on the trail campaigning way, way down in the numbers, but you try and get 4% poll, 4% in national polling for the presidency. It is an accomplishment in itself. Two-term governor of the state of New Mexico vetoed 750 bills there, famously, to bring that state's finances into line. 2-1 Democratic state. He was a pretty popular Republican governor. He got into a couple of Republican debates before the lights went out on that. Got off a couple of good lines. Here he was. This was September 22nd, Orlando. Fox News, Google debate. Johnson had this to say when asked by moderator and Fox News anchor Brett Baer about the president's economic performance and the stimulus.
Governor Johnson. My next-door neighbor's two dogs have created more shovel-ready jobs than this current administration.
A zinger there in the national debate from Gary Johnson. We've got lots of response, Governor Johnson, online here. Here's one listener who says, I wish him luck. I agree with many of his civil libertarian views and think the financial ones wouldn't happen, but all for you. But here's another from CC. Says, slashing government spending prior to economic improvement, austerity, CC says that's dumb and dumber. What about that? If lots of people are talking about getting in and cutting big, but you know the pushback is if we do that right now, we sink deeper into an economic hole. What do you say, Gary Johnson?
Well, I am in the camp that believes that we're going to suffer a monetary collapse as a result of borrowing and printing this money. And by the way, this is not going to be an announced. They're not. The government is not going to say 2 weeks from tomorrow there's going to be a monetary collapse. So go take all the money that you have and spend it now, because 2 weeks from tomorrow it won't be worth anything. It just happens, and it's a bond market collapse, and it is in the cards. Just count on it.
Interest rates are lower than they've ever been. People are shoveling money at the United States. They want to lend it to us right now, in U.S. federal borrowing costs.
Well, so Tom, using that as an example, how much of our debt is being purchased by the Federal Reserve? I mean, this is one of the issues surrounding audit of the Federal Reserve. How much of it's kind of an artificial market right now, because we don't know how much of our own debt we're buying. It's a closed loop. It's Bernie Madoff with a printing machine.
What would you do on the finance industry front? There was more and more kind of liberalizing of finance. Glass-Steagall came down. We saw what happened. The economy nearly collapsed. We've got a listener here. Response 2 says, Alan Greenspan was a libertarian, he writes to us. When the economy crashed and his libertarian view was proven incompetent, he said, I'm shocked. Response writes, the well-to-do come up with dream worlds. When it collapses, they walk away. What do you say?
Well, first of all, capitalism on the way up, communism on the way down. These people made some incredibly bad decisions that were not rewarded with failure. we should never have bailed out any of these financial institutions. And I'm not doing this in a vacuum. There are a lot of free market economists that are on board here that would say that would that have said that no, we would not have suffered a collapse. But we didn't allow them to fail. We bailed them out, and now they're getting bonuses on top of this. Look, this is a rigged game. Federal Reserve Treasury prints money. The Federal Reserve gives it to the banks at 0% interest. They don't loan it to us. They buy treasuries in a closed loop. And they make profit off that, and we're paying for that profit. It's an inside game. This is a rigged game. So now I'm back to the fair tax, issuing pink slips to half of Washington lobbyists, because half of Washington lobbyists are there to get loopholes that both parties have their hands out and are selling.
Would you regulate Wall Street or not, Mr. Libertarian, Governor Libertarian?
Well, so oftentimes I don't want to avoid the question. It's just regulations I don't think are the issue. It's allowing the free market to actually work. And so much of free market criticism actually ends up to be crony capitalism. It's crony capitalism that exists. It's crony capitalism is what we have an issue with. And so when you hand down these regulations, what you end up doing is you end up protecting a class, banking, that we've allowed to be too big to fail.
But without regulation, haven't we seen that before? I mean, here a listener, Kevin, writes to us as he is listening here. He says, how do libertarians justify their positions in total when we've already seen what they look like in actual practice? And we call that, Governor, we call that period the Gilded Age.
Well, let me use Enron as an example.
Okay.
After Enron, they came up with the rule. And that was mark-to-market accounting. Well, oh my gosh, if there was ever a regulation that made sense, it's mark-to-market accounting that would prevent an Enron from ever occurring.
Show real value. Yeah, okay.
Well, show real value.
Mm-hmm.
So arguably, mark-to-market accounting was a leading reason for why we had the 2008 collapse, because in a multi-trillion dollar mortgage market, we had one $180,000 trade in the middle of December at 5 cents on the dollar on assets that were actually yielding 5 cents, but it sold at 5 cents. Well, the entire market had to mark itself at 5 cents, and that was the collapse. So you look at something as simple as mark-to-market accounting. How can we not implement this as a regulation, and arguably that regulation is what precipitated the 2008, I mean, among other things, precipitated the 2008 collapse.
Gary Johnson is with us. He's running for the presidency of the United States as the Libertarian Party candidate. He's polling at about 4% nationally, polling at CNN poll puts him at 7% in Colorado, in Nevada, two key swing states in the presidential election. Governor Johnson, stand by. Lots of callers for you. Benjamin in Springfield, Illinois. You're on the air with Gary Johnson.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Governor Johnson,
yes.
I would love to vote for you, but I get nervous when I hear you talking about deregulation, and I'm afraid that you might have more faith in capitalism than I do to be able to protect some of the things that I think are important, like our environment and education. And you know, when you start thinking about allowing, you know, the free market to just go on its own, seems like sometimes the things that are in the best interest of corporations aren't in the best interest of our society at large.
Well, first off, Benjamin, there's no disagreement there. I mean, government has a fundamental role to protect us against individuals, groups, corporations that would do us harm. And that's from a financial standpoint, that's from a physical standpoint, that's from a pollution standpoint. We don't want corporations polluting. And
so you would keep the EPA in there, you would keep the SEC hard at work?
Well, I think it comes under the guise of protecting us, if you will, and that it is a fundamental role of government. But in the notion that we have to cut government by 43%, we have to balance revenues with expenditures, or we find ourselves without a government, that's what I maintain, we need to cut all these things by 43%. We need to squeeze out the largesse and live within our means. I think we all recognize that you cannot continue unsustainable spending and debt.
Benjamin, what do you say to that as a response to your concern?
Well, I guess it all comes down to a matter of where you draw the line at, and how much do you think that the government should have an idea of where we should go and create policies to get us there, or should it simply allow kind of a social Darwinism or things to just progress at their own pace and stay out of it?
Can you really have it both ways, Governor Johnson? Can you cut to the depth that you want to cut and still have a government that's viable in protecting the kind of things that Benjamin's concerned about?
I do believe that. And let's not discount attorneys out there, okay? Attorneys play a valuable role. Attorneys do a much better job of holding individuals, groups, corporations liable for what they do.
Benjamin, thanks for your call. Daryl in Lake Worth, Florida. Daryl, you're on the air.
Hi, Governor. Hi, Tom. I'm Governor Johnson. I'm a big fan. I just have a question, and I want to keep your feet to the coals on this. I've read some kind of troubling quotes that your foreign policy, I know it's get the troops home now, but is it from everywhere? And I read some quotes that it's from everywhere except where they let us keep it, and that seems like a lot of places. I'm okay with humanitarian aid, but I want to know how many, you know, I dread that you're going to cut the military budget a lot, but I want to know how many troops, I mean, where do you want to keep them? Do you want to keep troops in Germany and Britain? I mean, where do you want to keep troops, and from where do you want to bring them home?
Thanks, Daryl. Governor Johnson.
Well, so I'm going to be proposing a 43% reduction in military spending. And let me just start with the premise that we do need to provide ourselves with a strong national defense. I would just argue that defense is the operative word, not offense and not nation building. So how does a 43% reduction go down with regard to the military? Well, first of all, that takes military spending levels back to the year 2003, not quite the end of the world. Believing that the biggest threat to our national security is the fact that we're borrowing and printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar. But a 43% reduction in military spending, that is extricating ourselves from all of our military engagements.
Like where?
That would be Afghanistan immediately. That would be Libya. That would be getting out of our embassies. Our military
getting out of our embassies in the Middle East, you've said in recent days, like pulling out of Egypt, out of Libya, out of Yemen.
Yes, it's not a sign of weakness. It's just a sign of why make ourselves a target, and what are our vital American interests in the Middle East? I mean, I'm really curious. So back to the mm-hmm. reduction. Mm-hmm. You got to reduce the military footprint by 43%. That would be the bases. That would be the military that we have
in Japan,
on
in
duty in Japan, yeah. South Korea, Europe. It would be reducing nuclear warheads from 2,300 to 500.
Could I just clarify on the bases? Does it mean cutting them by 43% or getting rid of them? Does it mean shrinking them or bringing them all home?
Well, I'll call it the military footprint. Mm-hmm. I don't want to speak. I'm going to promise that I'm going to submit that budget, and obviously that will be very specific, but I won't speak to specifics. But other than to reduce that footprint by 43%. So 43% of bases, where do we cut? And not that doesn't end up to be a 70% reduction in bases. Military in uniform, on duty in South Korea, Japan.
What about Afghanistan, hot zones?
Well, let's bring the troops home from Afghanistan. And for all the issues that we're going to face getting out of Afghanistan tomorrow, I'm just going to suggest that if we get out of Afghanistan 20 years from now, we'll face the exact same issues 20 years from now. So let's just do it now.
You've said that you don't believe Iran is a military threat and that you would use presidential power to prevent Israel from attacking Iran and would not follow Israel, if I've got you right, or any other ally, into a war it had initiated there. Explain, please.
Well, we bomb Iran. We're going to find ourselves in a 2-year bombing maintenance program of Iran. We're going to make ourselves another 100 million enemies to this country that we perhaps otherwise would not have. I maintain that we have 200 million enemies, hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that, but for our military interventions, might not exist today. So it's our military interventions that have us as the scourge, if you will, have us as the bully on the playground, as opposed to the notion that we would stand up against the bully.
And Israel, as an ally that Benjamin Netanyahu would say, feels itself very threatened, existentially threatened.
Well, we bomb Iran. The biggest demonstration in the world in support of the U.S. after 9/11 was in Iran. A million demonstrators showed up in Tehran and gave support to the United States. And these are the people that we're going to bomb. Look, our beef is with Ahmadinejad. The Ayatollahs have said they don't. They are not developing a nuclear weapon. So our issue is with Ahmadinejad. And here it is. We're going to bomb Iran. We're going to kill a lot of innocent people. Our own men and service women are going to end up dying. This is our military intervention. If I may. The root of all evil in this country are politicians that want to get elected or reelected, and they are going to pose to you that the scourge of the earth are drugs, that we need to rid ourselves of the terrorist threat, that the illegal immigrant is the worst thing that's ever happened. Elect me, reelect me, and I will save you from all these ills. Well, it is in this context that we have our own men and service women coming back in body bags or coming back with their limbs blown off, and the tens of thousands of innocent people in the foreign countries that we've militarily intervened has also been a consequence.
Sarah in Boston. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on with Gary Johnson.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. Governor Johnson, I actually just have a question about something completely different. I was looking at your platform on education, and I noticed that you talk about going local and getting rid of the Department of Education. But I worry that without federal oversight, certain states might take the opportunity to get rid of programs like science classes or, you know, have religion play a greater role in the school. And I wonder how you think that would play out.
Governor Johnson, thanks, Sarah.
Well, so the Department of Education, established in 1979 under Jimmy Carter, I would just argue that based on performance, is there anything to suggest that the Federal Department of Education has been value added since 1979? I'm going to argue no. So every single state gets 11 cents out of every dollar that every state spends from the federal government. But understand, it's money that the state has sent to Washington in the first place. It kind of does a U-turn. They take a toll on it, and then they send it back. But they send it back with 16 cents worth of strings attached. So what everybody doesn't recognize is that it's really a negative. It costs money to take federal money. Just give education back to the states. 50 laboratories of innovation and best practice, and I think that's exactly what we will have.
What if those laboratories go back toward segregation? What if they go, as Sarah's concerned, against science? What does that mean for the country?
Well, you're believing that Washington has all the answers when it comes
to this. No, but it did push against segregation, and it has pushed, under most presidents, for science in the classroom.
Well, if you're talking about segregation, I mean, I think that is a constitutional issue where the federal government absolutely has a role. I'm not sure how segregation and education tie to one another. But
well, they certainly did historically in quite vivid ways that we all remember if we were alive then. Governor
well,
Wallace
I don't,
standing
I don't,
in the doorway.
Well, Tom, this was you're talking about issues that that occurred before there was a federal Department of Education.
Mm-hmm. And so let it go now and everything's okay. 50 laboratories of experimentation. I mean, it may be great. Sarah's worried about the places where it may fall the other way. We'll come back and look at that and much more. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson, former two-term governor of New Mexico, out to slash federal spending by almost half and bring the troops home from almost everywhere, as he describes it, joins us today from Durham, New Hampshire. He is on the ballot in 47 states, three more where he's still fighting, swing states where he may be a real factor. Gary Johnson, lots of response online here. Nicholas says, voting for Gary Johnson is like recycling. If everyone did it, the world would be a better place. Well, we'll see how many do. But then Casey writes, says to me, I guess, could you ask him to stop making libertarianism seem like it's just about legalizing marijuana and letting homosexuals marry, when in reality, she writes, he mostly just wants to destroy unions and get rid of things like Head Start and NPR, she adds. Of course, Mitt Romney would, too. What do you say to that characterization?
Well, look, I am just in the camp that believes that if we don't address this unsustainable debt, this unsustainable spending, that there will be consequences, and the consequences are going to be way beyond what needs to be mutual sacrifice on all of our parts, and that if we don't engage in this mutual sacrifice, we're going to find ourselves with nothing.
Could we sacrifice in different ways? You know, President Obama says, well, let's get some more revenue in here. Let's not just talk about cuts. You're talking about cutting big. The president says, well, we need to, you know, let's get revenue as part of the equation so we don't have to gut institutions that may be useful.
Well, let's abolish the IRS. Let's eliminate income tax, corporate tax, replace all that with one federal consumption tax. I think at a minimum, this is more fair than what we currently have. How much of your life revolves around having to deal with the IRS every single year? And look, we all know that this country is rife with crony capitalism. It's up for sale. Both parties sell loopholes. Individuals, groups, corporations, they buy those loopholes. Let's put a system into place where this won't even exist. It can't even exist. No more deductions, no more IRS, just one federal consumption tax. Issues around the border, immigration. You know, so much is talked about immigrants paying taxes. Well, look, we implement the fair tax. Taxes won't be an issue at all, whether you're illegal, legal, visitor to the U.S., U.S. citizen. None of us are going to be able to avoid paying one federal consumption tax.
I want to ask you about this moment, if I may. It gets to this issue of shared responsibility to one another, and in particular to the so-called right to health care. This was another GOP debate. I don't believe you were in this one. This was CNN's Wolf Blitzer asking then-candidate Ron Paul, who you are very admiring of, who you have supported, Wolf Blitzer asking Ron Paul how a hypothetical young person lacking insurance and facing a terminal disease should be treated by a hospital. You'll hear there was a little audience participation infamously as well. But here's Ron Paul first.
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But Congressman, are you saying that society should just let him die?
No. Yeah.
Ron Paul says no. Audience member said yeah. What about that question? What about the right to health care? Do you see one, Gary Johnson?
Well, first of all, I'm under the belief that there are those that are truly in need in this country. And but for the government, perhaps they don't receive the notion that they are in need and that they need help. But I just think we've stepped way over the line with regard to the definition of those in need. Now I'm back to my model of how we get out of this, which is getting the federal government out of the healthcare delivery business completely, devolve that to the states. The states are going to have to draw new lines, but I'm believing that they're going to be able to do that. And I come back to the alternative. The alternative is no health care whatsoever. The alternative is a government, is a country that has collapsed because our money isn't worth anything.
And you believe that we're just on that road. We can't engineer our way through this without...
We can absolutely engineer our way through this, but we got to start with a balanced budget. That still doesn't guarantee that we get ourselves out of this because we still have a $16 trillion debt looming over our heads. But you got to start with balancing the federal budget.
And do it now? What about the risk, I ask again, of being thrown back into, I don't know, depression?
Well, now I'm back to the fair tax, the notion that you implement a tax where there's no corporate tax. I think that in that scenario, tens of millions of jobs are created by the private sector. I see manufacturing jobs flocking back to the United States in a zero corporate tax rate environment. So you got to have both sides of this. And I'm believing that the fair tax reboots the American economy.
Isaac in Webster City, Iowa. Isaac, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to touch on Governor Johnson's points on legalizing marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I personally suffer from a spinal cord injury, so I've been through the regiment with my doctor on prescriptions for pain and stuff like that. And, you know, with the research that's been done, the medical benefits, you know, are staggering, and not to mention the boost it would give to our economy. You know, you just simply tax the sales, and I really like his ideas on that. Really congruous with things that Ron Paul have to say, and would really definitely change the war on drugs we've kind of created here with our own prescription drug system.
Isaac, I appreciate your call. Governor Johnson, I guess you came to this position in part through your own experience with injury and pain. What exactly would your policy be? I think I understand you would treat marijuana kind of like we treat alcohol, regulated but not illegal.
Well, I think we're at a tipping point when it comes to marijuana. I think we should legalize marijuana. I think that Colorado's initiative on the ballot in this fall to regulate marijuana like alcohol is going to pass. If it doesn't pass, you know what? It's going to happen. The reason why 50% of Americans now support legalizing marijuana is more and more people are talking about this. And the more people talk about it, I think the more recognition there is that this is very, very similar to the prohibition of alcohol. And based on my own experience smoking marijuana and drinking, I don't smoke marijuana today, I don't drink today, but I will tell you, in no category is marijuana more dangerous than alcohol. And I think people are recognizing that. I think that it's being spoken to. And by the way, it's never going to be legal to smoke pot, become impaired, get behind the wheel of a car, or do harm to others. But that should be government's responsibility. Border violence with Mexico, 40,000 deaths south of the border over the last 4 years. These are disputes that are being played out with guns rather than the courts. Legalized marijuana, arguably 75% of that border violence goes away.
There's the argument. Let's go to Jennifer in Lexington, Kentucky. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk to Governor Johnson about the fair tax issue. I think this is, well, I personally think it's a terrible idea for many reasons, but there's two reasons I'd like to bring up that he's already mentioned on your show today.
Okay.
One is, he says by making, he can make the fair tax less regressive by offering a $200 per month credit to every taxpayer.
Yeah.
But he's saying this in conjunction with having a balanced budget. It doesn't seem to me to make it especially more progressive to offer $2,400 a year to the richest taxpayers in America. So why not phase that out, especially if you're concerned about revenue issues on a balanced budget issue? And the second issue is that he assumes, this seems like a big part of making it cost neutral, he assumes that corporations are going to reduce the cost of products to offset the taxes that they're now saving. But what if Coke reduces the cost from a dollar to, say, only 85 cents or even 81 cents instead of 80 cents? This is not a cost neutral measure. It seems a way to make a direct transfer from taxpayers to corporations and allow them to hide it by saying, oh, this is just our basic cost, rather than acknowledge that now they're paying significantly less in federal tax dollars.
Jennifer, stand by. Governor Johnson, what do you say?
Well, Jennifer, I would argue that Coke is a very competitive industry, and that if you think Coke is going to be able to continue to sell that can of Coke for a buck, I'm going to argue that they're not, because there's a lot of other cola alternatives, and given pricing, that's the way things operate. Now, in this country, regrettably, free market doesn't always come to bear. Let me use healthcare as an example. We've restricted the choices that we have available to healthcare, and that really comes from the government. I saw where there will be 15,000 new IRS agents when it comes to President Obama's health care plan.
Which is extending health care to a lot more people, though.
Well,
and that's part of the reason, right? Get everybody in the pool.
Well, and so who's really going to take it on the chin when it comes to health insurance? It's going to be young people who basically are the healthy group that are going to pay for those that aren't so healthy. And young people, by the way, too, are taking it on the chin in many areas. I'm going to retire. I'm going to have health care. But you as a young person, you're never going to be able to retire. You're never going to be able to stop working. You're graduating from college with a home mortgage, with no home. And now you're being called on to mandatorily take on health insurance because we have to cover others that aren't so healthy.
Gary Johnson at the start of a, I think, 20 campus college tour right here. Jennifer, I'm going to move because we've got so many callers, but thanks for your sharp eye there. David in Nashville, you're on the air with Gary Johnson, David.
Hi, Tom. Relative to the freedom of choice for women to make health choices about their own reproduction and prevention of pregnancy, either through freedom of choice to terminate or through birth control. What say you?
I fundamentally believe that the abortion issue belongs with the woman involved, that the choices that go along with that should only lie with the women that are involved.
So straight up support for choice, for abortion
exactly.
as an option.
Well, this, again, difficult decisions, but those only that should be addressed by the woman involved.
With that position, did you ever have a shot at the Republican nomination?
Yes, I think so. I think the majority actually of Republicans are pro-choice. This is something that isn't really known, but the overwhelming majority of Republican activists are other. And I found this issue as governor of New Mexico to, yes, be something that was very important to a lot of Republicans, but kind of took a second seat to maybe the whole notion of good government. And I did not find it. I did not find it to be, a deal killer, if you will.
Elizabeth in Des Moines, Iowa. Elizabeth, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hi, Tom. My thing is, we should never have a third party because the third party takes votes from the other party. And so when you vote for a third party, you really are voting for the party who wins, not necessarily who you want. And so I'm always against. I can remember many, many years ago when the governor of Alabama was running against, and it threw it in the other camp because he took so many votes out. So absolutely against a third party.
Who are you supporting in November, Elizabeth?
Okay, I am supporting Romney, although I do not like everything he is for. I was always taught that you vote for the best of the worst because usually both men you do not agree with any all of both, so you do the best you can.
The best of the worst. Elizabeth, we've got it, and I'm grateful for your call. Gary Johnson, how about it? There, the polling shows that you have strength in swing states. You could make the difference. You appear to take more votes away from Mitt Romney than from Barack Obama. Will you be the Ralph Nader of 2012, siphoning votes in a very, very tight election?
Well, first of all, Elizabeth, every face on Mount Rushmore was a third-party candidate, so I guess you're going to discount those faces. And I'll just get back to the wasted vote thing. Look, for anybody that thinks they're wasting their vote on me, what happens if everybody wastes their vote? Well, I'm next president of the United States, and I'm going to argue that that really makes a difference. In four states, they've put the question of who I affect most. And in two states, New Mexico, Colorado, I take more votes away from Obama. In two states where they've asked that question, North Carolina and Michigan, I take more votes away from Mitt Romney. Look, who's to blame if Mitt Romney gets less votes? Mitt Romney! Who's to blame if Obama gets less votes? Obama! We need to vote for the person that we most, that emulates our views to the highest degree. And I think you have to vote for somebody that actually has a resume to suggest that they're going to doggedly pursue this stuff. Look, don't we want to elect a president that's going to be a leader who's going to get up every single day? I'm talking about a lot of things here. Well, based on my resume, I'm going to get up every single morning and talk about these things regardless of the criticism, regardless of the debate and the discussion. And, I'm pragmatic also. Let's move things forward. Let's move in the direction of equality and freedom and liberty for all of us.
So there's 8 weeks until Election Day. There could be a miracle, but unlikely. So,
you are likely to take votes from
somebody. Which way would you hope it goes? Toward fiscally, I don't know, fiscal responsibility is on your plate. Social acceptance is on your plate. If you tilt it one way or the other, which way do you hope it is?
Well, one of my big concerns is peaking too early. So, we're right on track here. I mean,
4% headed for 49.51.
Well, you got it. You got it. So this wave just needs to occur in the middle of October.
But just in case it doesn't make 51, which way do you hope it goes?
Well, how about the way that that most Americans feel, which I maintain most Americans are fiscally responsible and socially accepting? I think that's the majority category of Americans. That's where I fall. Well, where is that voice? Well, I got to tell you, Obama, when it comes to words, man, that guy says the right words. I'm going to argue that the reality doesn't match up at all with the words. And then Romney says it's a no-brainer that we should build a fence across the border. Well, I got to tell you, based on that, I don't have one molecule of brain. Romney says we need to balance the federal budget, but we need to increase spending for the military, and we need to hold Medicare intact. I got to tell you, it doesn't add up. And he's a smart guy. I mean, I'm believing he's a smart guy, and he's really a nice guy, but I don't know. Voting for somebody who's talking about the right things, and that's, of course, a determination that everybody here needs to make, listening, that's the decisions we make. That's how we change things in America, is you vote for the person you believe in.
Governor Johnson, last, what were you thinking when Bill Clinton said at the Democratic Convention, "We're all in this together" is a far better philosophy than "you're on your own"? What were you thinking, Libertarian candidate?
That he's dead on.
But aren't libertarians about, carrying your own torch?
Well, yes. Carrying your own torch is how being the best that we can be has the most benefit to everybody surrounding us.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure which side of the Clinton philosophical descriptor that comes down on. But you make...
Leave me to live my life. Leave me to live my life, and I'll do that responsibly, and I'll do that in a way that benefits others.
Governor Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party candidate for the presidency, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.